I miss my lady at Marina's and a coffee. Riding in the day, babe, living like a lusty flower, running through the grass for hours, rolling through the hay, yeah, like a puppy child. Your body sniffing like a lusty flower, running through the grass for hours, rolling through the hay like a puppy child. When I raise the rain fall down, washing out the cat on town, I just pour away somewhere in her eyes are down.
Well, good morning, everyone. Well, I'm so excited, I can't even think straight. Today is the second part of our series that Sheila and I devised on illustrated album covers. And we got selfish in the first show, and we just talked about album covers and the music that we loved in the 60s through the 80s. But today we have two special guests in the studio, and I'm very excited to introduce one of our own, Clyde Enslin. And he's got a real popular show here on Wowed, the Ride with Clyde, the DJ Driver. It's a show that airs every other Monday from 9 to 11. It's AM or PM? PM, right?
PM.
Yeah, PM, that's what I thought.
PM, you got me up early today, Tom. I'm usually asleep at this hour.
And I really apologize about that. I'll get you coffee after the show. And then we have really the most famous local designer and records and CD covers in the studio with us, in Richard Bangham. Well, Dick Bang is a nationally known artist and founder of Rip Bang Pictures, and he's won all kinds of awards for his artwork and his production and music packaging and video graphics. And, oh, my God, Richard, there's so many creative ventures you're in. I can't even begin to say it. I'll try to get through all of them. And, of course, we want to thank Bobby Hill for being in us to help us coordinate this. It's a very exciting day in the studio. Clyde, let's start with you. I'm dying to know how you came up with this concept for your radio show. You got to share it with us.
Well, it was really pretty organic, Tom. So I've been making most of my money the past 5 years as a Uber driver, and my passengers, who are mostly young people, would say to me, dude, you should be on the radio. You have a great radio voice. Now, bear in mind, Nobody I know has ever told me that before. Not my wife, not my parents, my family, my brothers, my best friends, my coworkers for 30 years of my career. Nobody said you should be on the radio. But then I start driving for Uber, and all these millennials are like, dude, wow, you would be great. And I go, thanks a lot for telling me I can't get a job at my age with no experience. But then I heard about Wowdy. Went to the website. It said, if you want to be on the air, if you want your own show, click here. And I thought, this is me. And I did, and I got a show, so it's just been great.
Oh, my God, that's so wonderful. You're such a great part of our family here at Wowdy. And how did you guys connect, Richard and Claude?
Well, today is the first time we've met, but I had heard about Dick from Chuck Sullivan, who was a guest on my show, because Chuck had written a book about Steve Winwood, but also from Jim Epstein, because Gail wow. and I were involved with the Wheaton Art Parade. And all these people, you know, I'd talk to them, and I'd say, you know, I was talking about Root Boy, or I was, you know, talking about Little Feet, and they were going, oh, man, you should meet Dick Bangham. He was a Rootette. And
so this is
a big day for me to finally meet Dick, because I've heard about him for years.
Wow. Well this is amazing. I actually had thought you guys had met before, but what I was going to say, you know, I told Steve about the show, Steve Hoffman, and he goes, oh, my God, you're going to have Richard Bangham on the show. This is so exciting. And Richard, I want you to, as an artist, as a graphic designer, as a videographer, tell us how this began for you. Tell us how this began with this art venture.
First of all, call me Dick, because I don't know who Richard is.
Oh, okay. I will. I'm a little formal here.
And Clyde, yeah, I actually listened to you. I think you've got kind of a Bill Clinton thing going, too.
Well, that's right. So that's part of my stand-up comedy act.
Oh.
So, more on that later.
So where were the beginnings for your art here, and how did this blossom so nicely?
Well, I was drawing pictures before I could talk or walk, and I could hold a pencil and draw a picture. It was, you know, you could tell what it was, and so it's just something that, you know, that just kind of didn't. In high school, you know, I'd be doing everybody's student council posters for them.
Wonderful.
And I did a little comic strip in the student paper. And, by the time I got to college, I studied architecture, which actually gave me a bit of creative discipline. You know,
wonderful.
Of course, I had no burning desire to be an architect particularly, so I dropped out of college in my junior year and started working for some of my professors. And one of them was going to open up a studio in New York. I said, you know, I'll help you. So I ended up moving to New York in like 1971 and lived there for a couple of years. And, you know, that was the early 70s was a renaissance for graphic arts at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I met all my heroes and gods of graphic arts and illustration. Charlie White III, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was
it sounds familiar, actually. Yeah.
Back in those days, he was running to the bank every month with about a couple $100,000. He was like the most in-demand illustrator going. And airbrush illustration.
Oh, remember those days at the airbrush?
And when I was 14, or when I was actually up until I was about 14, the Rod and Custom Show would come through town every year right around my birthday, which is April 1st. And my dad would take me to the Rod and Custom Show so I could see the new Big Daddy Ed Roth car. And Mouse, Stanley Mouse, would tour with the show and do all the signage for the show, for the cars, but also set up a little stand where you have these silkscreen t-shirts of his, you know, monster cars and Rat Fink kind of characters, and they'd be in black and white, but then he'd be surrounded, it looked like he was an intensive care unit. He'd be surrounded by all these IV units, and each one was a different color and a hose attached to an airbrush. So he had about six airbrushes hanging around, and he'd sit there and paint your sweatshirt color, and I just sit there and watch him the whole time I was down there. And
Well, you know, it's amazing because now, you know, you press a button on the computer and the airbrush, you know, works. But in the old days, you know how intricate they were. You had to clean them, and you had to, when it was just a pain in the neck.
Well, I use it to mist plants, you know.
Yeah, mist plants. That's good. Well, Clyde, let's kind of paint a picture of the music scene in the 70s here, or maybe late 60s and early 80s in the metro area. Of course, I wasn't around here. I didn't know, but there's, you know, that connection to where, you know, Dick, you know, moved into the art scene and started doing these album clubs. Paint a picture for us, because I wasn't sure about that back when.
Yeah, so I moved here in 1979. I had just graduated from college, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and there were a lot of people from Carolina who moved up here, either to D.C. or to Atlanta, and I picked D.C., but it was all about WHFS. If you were 22 years old in 1979, everybody, I mean, Surf and Weasel and Damien were just household names, and they played the coolest stuff. And then, you know, everybody was talking about Root Boy. Now, Root Boy had probably headed to Florida by 79, and he didn't have many years to live at that point, but I had heard about him. I heard about the Psychedelic. I never went to the Psychedelic, but I went to the Cellar Door, and I went to other places that were soon to close. But that was really an incredible and legendary time. Like, the Cellar Door was where Nils met Neil Young, and Nils was in high school, Nils Lofgren.
Right.
So I heard about the band Grin when they were playing at the Wheaton Youth Center. So that goes way back. And that's how come I was so familiar with Dick, because he knows all these guys. Yeah, well, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, and Mary Chapin Carpenter was living in Tacoma Park
right
at that
now, so
time.
Dick, how did you slip into this music scene? It sounds so amazingly timely. How did that happen, and how did your art kind of permeate these music scenes?
Well, first of all, that time, yeah, particularly the late 70s, early 80s, we had a really vibrant club scene and a lot of bands doing their own material, and it was just a creative explosion musically around here. And HFS really helped move it, because they'd play if you had a recording and they liked it, you know, they'd play it. And I got involved with the music scene actually from the recording end. I had my own bands in high school and stuff.
So you were playing as well.
But just kind of knocking around. Actually, one of my bands in college was called Beverly Pureheart. And it was me and Joe Lee of Joe's Record Paradise, future Joe's Record Paradise, and a couple of our buddies. And I'd written up some songs, and Gene Rosenthal of Delphi Records, we'd met him. He actually was selling Joe and I pot at the time. and anyway, he heard some of our stuff and said, "Why don't you guys come in and record on Delphi Records?" We said, "Holy crap, you know, yeah." And so we recorded a little 5-song EP. By the time the record came out, Gene and Joe had been busted for selling marijuana, and the band broke up. Joe moved to they got off the charges for mainly because Joe's father was the acting governor at the time, or lieutenant governor.
Oh man, it helped.
They were wiretapping his home phone, and so all the charges were eventually dropped. But anyway,
yeah, so people were very paranoid back then too, which is sort of what gave rise
to
Root Boy. Now Joe Lee is now the owner of Joe's Record Paradise at Cameron Street and George Avenue in Silver Spring, right? In the basement of that building.
Right. Well, his son Johnson runs that now. Joe's turned it over to Johnson. But his original store was right, you can see it right around behind us here on Carroll
Avenue.
It's
an amazing, I still play CDs, being an old guy. And I go there all the time.
Well, now, Richard, how did you propose your gift, you know, your talent did you just say, "Hey, listen, I like to design our albums"? I mean, how did that work? How did you get into that other niche of just starting this fantastic career of album covers? And you know, when you get a chance, what was your first album cover? Do you remember way back when?
Well, my first cover was the Beverly Pureheart thing. I did it kind of a R. Crumb looking pen and ink drawing.
Yeah, that's the one we have right here in the studio.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Yeah.
I remember my father said this and said, he was just so he was he says, "What's your mother going to think?" Because I've got this kind of Popeye looking naked lady.
Well, it looks like it's half Popeye and half olive oil.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Wow, that's a good way of describing it for our listeners. And it has that, you know, arc crumb looking. I was, which we've talked about on the show quite a lot. And so, okay, you did it. You did this Beverly Pureheart, and all of a sudden things started to.
Well, I did the album. Never, you know, the band broke up before the record ever came out, and so and I moved to New York. Joe moved to California, but Gene Rosenthal at Adelphi asked me to start doing covers for him. He was putting out this line of blues recordings he'd done with people like Bucca White and Furry Lewis, Mississippi John Hurt.
Oh, wow.
Skip James, who lived in Tacoma Park, died in Tacoma Park, I think. And all these great old blues guys. And so I was doing covers for him, even after I moved to New York. He was still asking me to do covers, so that's how I got into the album cover.
So you're freelancing from New York for artists here and everywhere else,
right? Right, yeah.
Well, how did that work? Did you have a manager, or you did it all by yourself back
No,
then?
It was a very mismanaged, haphazard career.
Like most artists. Oh, very good. Well, you know, the thing about it is it sounds like, you know, the tentacles kind of going out. And we're going to play another song, and then we're going to come back and talk about, you know, these legends, Root Boy Slim, Nils Lofgren, the Nighthawks, and how you got connected. So let's put up a tune, and then we're going to come back and talk about it.
Yeah, he's the keeper of the key. Blind boy Billy, he's a fat man with a razor. He's about to bring you to your knee. All up and down on the eastern seaboard, blind boy Billy calls home. With 100 miles of gasoline, 500 miles to go, 1,000 miles of miles on the road. With blind boy Billy, you sing a song. Shoving him in, he's a hitting his face, hitting the chin. He don't care what the police say. Play that fiddle in the break of day. Play that fiddle. Play that fiddle. Play that fiddle in the break of day. Blind boy, play the blues away. Play that fiddle. Play that fiddle. Play that fiddle in the break of day. Blind boy, take it away. On the table and a dime in the pocket, finger on the trigger and an eye in a socket. Once upon a time and the goose drank wine, the monkey spit tobacco on the streetcar line. Streetcar broke and the monkey choked. They all had to go to town on the Billy Goat. But that old Billy kept on walking. He kept on talking. Now he goes playing the fiddle through the brain and then goes playing. Play them blues away. Girl, Miss Donna Pentagon.
Okay, well, welcome back, everyone. Wow, we're hearing some flashes from the past here. But, you know, you guys were kind of involved with this really enigmatic group of musical artists in the D.C. area that were kind of, you know, beginning to break out and make it big. Tell us, you both of you could jump in here, this Root Boy Slim phenomenon and then Niels Lofgren. Why don't you guys share? Now, I'm dying to know, Dick, that, you know, they said, like, you know, you're a great artist. Help us out. You know, we got the sound. You got the hand. How did this work out? And how did you become so attached to this Root Boy Slim phenomenon?
Well, as I said, I was doing album covers for Adelphi, and they were based in Tacoma Park. In fact, their headquarters was right behind it, in the back of Joe's store. So when I moved back here from New York in 73, 74, Gene had come into, he'd won some lawsuit over Mississippi John Hurt, and so he had some extra money, and he was starting to put out a lot of new records. He had the Nighthawks, he had the Roz and Mountain Boys, he had a whole line of jazz artists and bluegrass artists, and I was doing all of those covers.
Wow.
I did all the covers. So I got to know a lot of musicians locally. Through
you were seeing a lot of shows,
and during that time, I still was writing my own songs, and I had kind of demoed up in my house enough material to do an album. I had this, I'd seen the Tubes. I don't know if you remember the Tubes. Joe would take me to see the Tubes. It was just incredible.
The Tubes. Yeah, I remember the Tubes.
And I said, that's what I want to do. They had an act that was all choreographed. They had video, great songs, great music. It was all these art students from college in Phoenix, I think, somewhere. Anyway, I said, that's what I want to do. But so I was going to do the Rip Bang Big Band and Review, and I would just rely on all the musician friends I had, and I'd been in and out of studios. And then Joe says, wait a minute, you don't want to do that. You know, listen to this guy. And he hands me this little tape of Root Boy. It was just, I had three songs on it. It was kind of a little garage tape. And the first song was You Broke My Mood Ring. And I just, and it was
precious.
This big voice coming out. And I said, oh, man. And then he had I Used to Be a Radical that we just heard.
Yeah, we heard that.
And then another one called I Want It Now. You know, yeah. Get out of that bed, woman. Rustle me up some grub. You know,
yeah,
I want it now. So he said, well, what the hell? Let's meet him and talk to him about it. And I met him. We played Scrabble.
That's too much.
Scrabble again. He's a great guy.
Well, you know, when they say, who in history would you want to have a dinner, sit next to at a dinner party, like William Faulkner or James Joyce or something? What I would say is I want to sit on the couch with Root Boy and watch the Gong Show. And you were there. Dick, that's who you were there. You lived it.
Yeah.
Watching Jeopardy and the Gong, because he had all these popular culture references, like Christmas at the Kmart. He wrote about waitresses. He wrote about everyday people. And I was from Florida where he ended up. And so In Jail in Jacksonville was a song that had personal meaning to me and my family. And but also The Shah Is Gone. You know, it was so serious when the Shah was here in 1979, and the hostages and everything else. And here this guy is so irreverent that he writes the song saying, yeah, the Shah's gone on vacation in L.A. We're not going to see him around anymore on the East Coast. And I was like, what is this, right?
Big
crazy stuff.
To L.A.
But the thing was, listening to it now, 30 years later, the quality of the musicianship, Dick, first rate. And
yeah,
you could hear it on that song,
the
horns
tight,
and everything else. And that's these songs that you did covers for, the Roslyn Mountain Boys, Mary Chapin Carpenter, and Niels Lofgren. I mean, these are great songs, great music.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, one reason that this community can support a radio station like Wowdy, because they're all from Tacoma
Right.
Park.
It's strength of the community. Well, I wanted to kind of talk about this post-pop, because in some ways, Root Boy, I found he was taking performance art, you know, out of pop in a really, really interesting way. And now I want to, Richard, hear about when you started like making these covers, did you go to the traditional media? How did you slap that paint on? What did you use? Tell me about that process for our listeners. And then, of course, later we'll talk about the technologies you've embraced. But what were the basic tools that you used when you were making these covers?
Well, back then, yeah, I call it analog.
Analog art.
It was pen and pencil and illustration board. I used X-Acto blades for cutting friskets for an airbrush.
Wow, very good.
Or cutting Rubylith overlays to lay on color manually. People used to say, well, why is it taking you so long to get my cover done? And I was like running around town to anybody I knew had like a big industrial camera and what they called strippers. Were pressmen who worked with film, and they'd strip the film and register and everything for the press. So I was in there doing that with them overnight. You know, we'd be in there just cutting film and
well, the old days.
But I would knew all the typesetters around town, and in fact, my wife was one of them who worked on several album covers with me back then. She had her own little typesetting business, and that's how we get to know each other.
Well, it's fascinating. I think a lot of young artists today take it for granted that you had to work intimately with printers, photographers. It was like a collaboration in a sense to print out an album cover. I think a lot of young people take it for granted. You know, they think they crank it out on the computer.
Oh yeah,
in 5
thank
minutes.
God for Photoshop and
oh my goodness,
InDesign
it was.
And,
well, and Dick, you've done hundreds of album covers, but you've probably used hundreds of different type fonts. Like this little feet kicking it at the barn. One of your more recent covers is probably maybe from the late 90s or something, but it's that's a font I've never seen before. It's cool. It totally works. I think kicking it at the barn.
Right. I know. I had to.
Well, I bet you were kind of inventing fonts too as you were going along.
Well,
a lot of.
Well, I remember Presstype and Letraset.
You have to rub the letters.
So, Tom, your students today are used to a world in which there's almost an unlimited number of fonts. But back in the day, you didn't have many.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, no, there was limited.
There were lots of fonts, but you might pay. Like there was Phil's Photo Facility, which I worked with a lot in D.C. and they did photo type, but they charge you by the word, you have like a three word title or something, and that might cost you $100 or
in some ways.
I learned how to draw lettering myself, I actually did my own hand lettering.
Exactly.
For a while.
So that sense of community that you talked about, Clyde, was kind of part of the collaboration in developing these graphics. And I wanted to kind of mention that. Now, how about the musicians? Did they sit down with you? You know, sometimes when you get too many cooks spoil the broth in an art venture, did they come and huddle the band members? Did they huddle around you and say,
for the covers?
Yeah.
It's always different, I think the ones that that I get micromanaged on,
yeah, that's the one.
Tend to be a little stiffer than the ones that they just say, whatever you think, So
yeah, because of that freedom to express yourself. Well, we kind of we're talking about today is a really big anniversary in 11/17/1970 that Clyde brought up of this great
Elton
John.
Yeah, that was the first song that we heard at the top of the hour, and the introduction by Dave Herman of A&R Studios was in a radio studio in 1970 in November. So Elton was just starting out in 1970. Remember, the Beatles had broken up in April. Kent State was in May. The Isle of Wight concert was in August. And then Elton was just starting out, but they broadcast it live at A&R, and he has said that he thinks it was his best in his whole career, which is now coming to a close.
Right.
And the edition that they put out in the U.S. was called 11/17/70, and so today being 11/17, it's very apt 48 years ago today to play that song again. The version that we heard was released in the U.K., so it was called 17/11/70. Beautiful album cover.
Fabulous.
I put it on
overlay,
my,
the simple overlay reversal
of a black and white photo.
And that was
when he was first kind of kicking out the you know, the piano bench. And then what's amazing to me is I didn't quite know how acrobatic Nils Lofgren was until I saw him. And Elton, I think, was the first person to jump around, jump around like that. But Nils did a full forward roll on stage
He was jumping around like crazy.
Trampolining, and this is one of your videos that you've done, a couple with Nils, but there's a lot of connections among all the things that we're going to be listening to today, and we're also going to hear some songs, and I think coming up next will be Lesson to Learn, which was written by Joe Triplett, who was in the Roslyn Mountain Boys, but it was recorded. His credits are that it was recorded for Sykesville for the album of Claude Jones, but the version of the song that Rod Stewart recorded, which you know because Nils told you that Rod and the Faces, because he was hanging out with the Faces and Rod, called Hard Lesson to Learn. So it's
That's a great song.
All right.
You know that song?
No, you better
believe
it.
So it's on the Rod Stewart album, 20 Greatest Hits, but it's written by Joe Triplett. But the credit on Rod Stewart's version is Bernie Taupin.
Yeah.
And Joe Triplett. Wow. And Jay Blackley or B. Blackley, who's another maybe local guy. I don't know Blackley, but again, Bernie Taupin. So I hope at the end we'll have time today to have the final finale that Elton does, because Dave Herman, a radio legend from A&R. Thanks, everybody. Dee, Nigel, and these guys are still with Elton today.
Right, his tour. Sure.
And Bernie, he's like, Bernie, incredible lyrics. So hopefully we'll have time that at the end. But that's from the UK version, because it has Amarina on it, and the version the US release did not. So that was the first song we heard, today was Bad Side of the Moon, but then followed by Amarina, which was the soundtrack to Dog Day Afternoon.
Well, I wanted to jump in about Elton John, because I remember in the 70s when the Captain Fantastic album came over and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. I actually saw that tour at Madison Square Garden when I was young, and the famous British pop artist Alan Aldridge
he the guy? Did he do Yellow Brick Road and those?
One I could think of, but he did the Captain Fantastic album. And this is what I wanted to address to Dick here, because he took a Hieronymus Bosch painting from the Renaissance and turned it into this album cover. Now, I was going to ask you about that, because you've worked with a lot of famous illustrators over the years. I mean, Neon Park and Peter Blake is huge. Okay, so I want you to Mandy, tell us a little about possible influences that might have kind of stimulated this output, because you're prolific. Tell us a little about that.
Alan Aldridge was a big influence. Just he did the illustrated Beatles book, the Captain Fantastic, which I love that cover.
Amazing
cover.
Probably
my favorite Elton John cover.
For sure.
And I'd never met Alan, but I was a big fan. In the States, Charles White III, Charlie White, was huge influence on me.
Wow.
He didn't do that many album covers, but I remember a couple that he did do. Was a J.J. Cale Troubadour, which has guitar-shaped clouds in the sky. If you've ever seen that.
Charles, I mean, that's huge.
And he did, he was good friends with Rod Stewart, and I think I don't know if he did Rod's cover or it was an illustration for Rolling Stone or something, but it was an airbrushed illustration of Rod looking like a bad schoolboy, English schoolboy.
Which he was.
With short pants on, right? Wearing short pants.
Right.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's a great illustration. And so Charlie, I ended up working with Charlie out in L.A. Years later, and we're still great friends. And my little brother became partners with Charlie, and they started studio where they did architectural scale illustrations.
Wow.
Like Treasure Island in Las Vegas and City Walk and Universal.
So mural size studios. Kind of things, right?
No, the buildings.
You know, oh, the entire.
They art directed and.
For the whole theme, right?
Yeah, so
wow.
Like the City Walk actually I worked on both of those projects too. Robert Crumb. I mentioned Robert Crumb. I mean, he was huge influence.
Well, Dick, you had mentioned R. Crumb to me because we also, I told Tom when he was thinking about a show about album covers, I said, I know there's this project, because Wayne had told me that you were working with Richard Harrington on a like a coffee table book or a book,
right,
which would be pictures and words. And so Wayne, like Steve, you said Steve does, yeah. Dick, Wayne was like, when you see Dick, ask him, when is the book going to come out? Yeah. So I said, okay. But you and Richard have done a lot of work on this thing, and it may be coming out when the time is right.
I hope so. It's a big book. Richard's spent years just writing it and researching it, and I've been working with him trying to, you know, do the layout. And,
but Art Crumb checked it out and sent you a letter about it.
You got a letter from
Robert Crumb.
Oh yeah, he was complimenting. He said that it he learned stuff that he didn't know about himself.
That's great.
And thought it was really well done. Richard, of course, was he's been on the radio on.
He's been
Robbie
on
Weasel's show. A
he's
times.
Been twice at least
and
on
was,
Robbie and Weasel's
worked
show.
Worked for the Washington Post for years as their pop.
Well, you guys should have your own show on WOWD. You and Harrington just talking
he's
about
a busy,
album covers.
Hey, Clyde, wait a minute. He's a busy guy. Anyway, well, we're gonna get back to the music in a sec, and so let's go to Lesson to Learn, which is this is the song that Rod Stewart did later on, right?
Yeah. So Joe Triplett wrote it, and it was first released by Claude Jones, which is a band with local roots, on their album Sykesville.
Right. But this is the Rise of Mountain Boys performing. I just didn't realize it wasn't on that album.
So this is the Ros and the Roslyn Mountains, if you can see. So hopefully people can go to your can they go to your website and see these albums, Dick, or what's the
eventually.
Best way? So we'll when they're up in an accessible venue, we'll send it around or I'll post it on Facebook or something, because the Roslyn Mountains are these high rises.
Yeah, I mean, that you we see have the album Bristol cover City, right yeah. in front of us, and it's you know, it has that, you know, that look of the times, but here Roslyn, I mean, it's almost unrecognizable because now it's even higher mountains.
This was a photograph by their then manager and a good friend of mine, Michael Oberman, who's a very accomplished photographer, and I think it was Mike's idea to have the Roslyn Mountains as the background.
The Roslyn Mountains, that's the skyline of Roslyn, Virginia, people.
It was a black and white photo that I had a sepia print made of, and then I airbrushed in all the color.
Well, I had never heard this version. I've, of course, heard Rod Stewart's version, which is on the 20 Greatest Hits of Rod Stewart album. But this is where it all started with Joe Triplett and the Roslyn Mountain Boys.
Just what you want. Sometimes gonna get fine. But she isn't you, I know that too. So long ago, many years gone by, how could I let her get away? Sorry to bring her up, I know it must seem strange. I do love you, but it's not the same. And you have to know that I've tried so many times before. How could I let her get away?
Okay, welcome back. Well, we'd like to address that last song by Nils Lofgren, Let Her Get Away, because that's part of your whole triangle of here we have Nils, we have Root Boy Slim. Tell us your involvement in this, because this is like right up your alley as an artist dealing with these musical artists.
Yeah, that Let Her Get Away was actually co-written with Root Boy Slim. I think Root came up with the words and Nils put it to music, and he may have edited the lyrics a little bit. But Root Boy had a real kind of sentimental side to him that people don't know about. You know, it was a soft stage. He was a pretty charming, laid-back guy. And the song has got a wry sense of irony in it, in that he's singing about the girl who got away to the girl who looks just like her that he's with now. You know, he says, wow. You're not her. I love you anyway, but you're not her.
That's a visual cue right there. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot, Dick. You've done a lot of album covers. You've won awards for a lot of them. Could you maybe kind of siphon one out for us and tell us what was like the most exciting one that you produced and maybe why? Because, I mean, you know, you've got them out there, and that must be a tough question.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, my first instinct is to say the next one.
Oh, that's a wonderful, that's a very artsy, wonderful, creative answer.
But I'd say, you know, just in terms of the criteria, I'd say the first Root Boy cover, just because it was me in my little workshop in Tacoma Park and hand lettering the graphic and setting up photo shoot for the back cover, and And just having fun working with Root Boy and the band and everything. We were all just having a great time. And it was for Warner Brothers. It was my first major label.
Wow.
In fact, I was offered a job to work in the art department doing album covers for Warner Brothers. And I turned it down because, you know, I'm working with Root Boy Slim.
Yeah. We all do these tangential moves in our art careers. Well, one of the things I think is really important, you know, I was an illustrator for 30 years, and I didn't embrace technology very well. And that's probably one of my downfalls for me and my pocketbook. But I wanted to, you know, ask you, because you have. Your website is so, you know, modern, up to date. How did you do it? Tell me how you embraced it. You were a board artist, the old-fashioned kind of Renaissance board artist, and then you zoomed into technology. How did that happen?
Well, when Apple when desktop publishing came out, it was just opened up. Just everything to me, because at that point, like I said, I was doing things analog, and I'd have to go run to the typesetters. I'd be over at the color separators. I'd be up all night working on films. I'd be spilling paint and waking up breathing paint all night with the airbrush and getting very little sleep. And then all of a sudden, I could do it all on a computer. And I mean, that evolved. Originally, I still had to run somewhere to get it scanned so right. I could work with it, but Photoshop and anyway, I kind of evolved with it. Now the airbrush, yeah, I can airbrush. I still will, if it's an illustration, I'll still draw it. You know, I'll get a pencil and paper out and draw it and clean it up. Then I scan it in, and then I go and airbrush it and color and everything. I'm not spilling any ink. I can if I want to. I can make it put in the right, you know, filter, but Adobe Creative Cloud or Creative Suite is just a beautiful thing, and I've been growing with that for the last since the 90s, I guess.
Wow. Well, there are several things you said that are really important. The first thing that you said that's really important is that your hand is still in it. Even though you're dealing with the technology, the computer, the film, your hand is always part of that process. And I think a lot of young people think that you just press a button and presto, you know, that hand and also that concept. So the other word...
And the experience of having used the analog tools, the X-Acto blades,
triangles, a ruler. And T-squares. I won't get into that. You know, people don't even use rulers anymore. But what I was going to say was, the other thing is, you said growing. And I think this is the key in this show, Artist Experience, that you're growing with the tools. You're growing as an artist. You've been doing this a long time.
Every time I open up Photoshop or one of those, I still learn something new every time. They run so deep. And it's just, you know, it's amazing how intuitive those programs are, and you've got all the tools you need if you know how to use them, I always learn some new trick.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we only have a few more minutes. I just going to leave us we've got to thank Dick Bangham and Clyde Enslin for being here, and we're going to close up the show. Let's talk just for a second real quick about Rip Bang Pictures and what's on the horizon.
Well, on the horizon, Rip Bang Pictures is our creative production and arts and whatever puzzle solving studio. That's basically me and my wife Linda, and we collaborate with other photographers and different artists of different disciplines. And so, right now, our main project is we're working on the movie about WHFS. When it was the Bethesda Freeform radio station, which was kind of started in '69 and was sold in 1983. But it was the station where all the DJs, there was no program they could play, kind of like WOWD is.
Right.
They could play anything they wanted to play. And it was at that time, there was no cell phones, internet, So that was how we all got our community culture and information, was through the HFS and the local art papers like the Unicorn Times. And
wow. Well, you know, I can't thank you enough for sharing your expertise here. And Clyde, Sheila, and I have to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for this idea. It sounds like another show's in the works. We'd like to thank Bobby Hill, as we always do. And Bobby's coming up next, so stay tuned. And we also want to, we'll see you in 2 weeks, and we hope you enjoyed the show. But Sheila and I want to talk to our listeners on the next show about the art of Thanksgiving and the depictions of Thanksgiving and harvest in the history of art. And there's some very famous artists. Wow, we have Norman Rockwell. We have, Bruegel. We might even have Richard Bangham here, Dick Bangham illustration for us. But we're talking about Thanksgiving anyway. We wish you all a happy Thanksgiving and be safe. And stay tuned for Bobby coming up with this music. And we'll see you all in 2 weeks. And thanks again, guys. You did a great job here, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Tom. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you both for having me on. And next time we see you, I'll bring some turkey sandwiches.
All right. Sounds good. Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
All right.
Bye. Pulled out in a cloud of dust, laying rubber and spewing and rusting on any road he'd take. He'd have his foot on the pedal and my heart on the brake. Night I see him screaming by.